two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
In the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It is a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Hour two of the Greenhouse Show. Thanks for being with us here on KSL News Radio. I'm Dave Meekham sitting in for Maria Chaleos, and of course alongside, first time in the studio in a long time, Tom Bettis. Great to have you here, Tom.
It's great to be back.
And we're going to start at this hour with a couple of phone calls. We've got some people patiently waiting. Richard in Bountiful, you've got a question about pesticides.
Yes. I put pre-emergent down in April and again in June. And I've got the biggest crop of spurge I've ever had.
What pre-emergent product did you use?
I don't remember which one I used. I just got it at IFA.
Okay. Some pre-emergent, well, pre-emergents are not all the same. And many of them are great for things like crabgrass, but not so good for spurge. And so there's a few things that need to be talked about, and pre-emergent we'll get to, and it's a powerful tool. But the next question is why is there spurge everywhere? Because spurge, you can still have some, but it doesn't invade a very healthy lawn very readily. So what is going on with the lawn that might be allowing the spurge to take over?
My lawn is in excellent shape, I would say.
Okay.
And I made sure that it said on the bag that it would control spurge.
Well, even though it's registered, it doesn't mean it's like the best product out there. So as far as your lawn, what's your mowing height?
I've got my mower on the highest
good
level.
Okay. And then fertilizing a couple times a year and, you know, as
yeah,
far as keeping that up. And then I know our water schedules are a little bit restricted right now, but what's your usual watering schedule?
We're watering twice a week.
Okay. Sounds good. I mean, it sounds like you're doing what you can.
But the other thing is it's in places that I've never seen it before. That's
okay, because each spurge plant can produce hundreds of seeds, and they're so small that they'll flow with irrigation water even just a little bit. So they're easily spread, and because every plant produces thousands of seeds or hundreds of them, it spreads quickly. So some things that you can look at doing are to continue to maintain your lawn, make sure, you know, mowing at the height is up there and just that, things of that nature. But as far as pre-emergent, I would recommend one in the spring made by a company called BioAdvanced. It used to be Bayer, the aspirin company. But BioAdvanced makes one called season-long broad-leafed weed control.
Okay.
And you can't really apply that now because of some of the products in there will volatilize due to being too hot. But you would put that down in sometime in May. And you can use it in combination with what you regularly did in April. But this season-long has a product in there called Gallery, which is much better against broadleaf weeds.
Okay.
So the now, go ahead.
Is there any? I've tried spraying that with Trimec when it was cool here before it was about 80 degrees, but it seems to just kind of burn it a little bit, but it doesn't kill it.
Yeah, the Trimec is a really good product, but it the Spurge has such a waxy coating on the leaves, you may have to step up to something like Speed Zone or maybe Q4 Plus is another one you could look at that may do a better job.
Okay. Speed Zone. Okay.
Yeah, and it's made by PBI Gordon, the same people that make Trimec. It just has an extra active ingredient in it called carfentrazone that helps penetrate those leaves better. But it is too hot right now to use it, and so it would be this coming spring.
Well, could you put it on early in the morning when it's 80 degrees?
You know, I would rather, if you were going to do some spot spraying, I'd rather you do it in the evening when it's not windy, so it has all night. And you might be able to get away with some small areas, but you still need to be extremely careful because that will volatilize. You know, definitely not the whole lawn, but you might be able to do some hot spots very carefully.
Okay, some good hints. I'll try it next year better.
Good luck with that, Richard. I'll tell you what, Ton, Spurge is no fun. I first encountered it about a year ago now. It's not in my lawn, thank goodness. But it did invade that area where there were a few bare spots where I didn't have grass clippings down around my tomatoes. And Spurges, it moves crazy fast.
It does, because those seeds are so small, you kick the soil and it moves it. You irrigate, and if that irrigation water flows at all, it moves it. It moves in the wind. So there's so many different ways. And when I say that one plant produces hundreds of seeds, I'm not exaggerating.
Right. If you let them go, and to the point where they're maturing and producing seeds, you're just asking for trouble.
You are. And so if you see Spurge coming in your garden especially, just hoe it out and get rid of it. Because once you sever that taproot, it's done. You know, it doesn't mean more won't germinate, but that current batch of plants is done if you can get to it before they start to flower.
And that's the nice thing. I mean, it's not like a bindweed where you can knock it back and it just keeps coming back the same plant. This, once you get it out of there, it's gone. And this has not happened to me, but I'm aware that the sap of these seeds can irritate skin for some people.
It is a member of the Euphorbia family, and so it has milky sap. And so if you are hand pulling, I would recommend just a pair of gardening gloves or something to keep the sap off your skin. And so there is that. The Spurge germinates in April and early May, but it stays really small and hidden in the lawn. And it sends down a taproot that can go 6 inches or deeper into the soil. And so even in drought, it'll stay green. And then it rears its ugly head in June and July. And we're stuck with really not much we can do as far as an herbicide because it's just too hot.
Right. So good idea if you are pulling Spurge to put it in a bag so whatever seeds are still on that plant aren't gonna hang around and, you know, carry on the tradition.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take one more call here before we get to the break. Katie has been waiting patiently in Lehigh. Good morning, Katie.
Hi. It's actually Patty, but that's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Patty.
That's all right. I just had a comment. I have had success for the last 3 years of putting that red reflector tape in my peach trees to keeping the birds out. And I just wanted to pass that along because I've had a few of my neighbors who have had trouble with birds, but I haven't because I've been using it. And I noticed one of my neighbors put silver and they still get the birds. So I think the red one, the one that has the one, you know, red side on it, really works for keeping birds out of your peach trees.
Where did you purchase them?
I got them at IFA in Riverton. The one in Lehigh didn't have any more. They were out. So, but that's where I bought it, was at the one in Riverton.
Hmm. Oh, very good. Very good. Well, thank you for that suggestion. And
yeah, I cut them about 2 feet. I cut them about 2 feet long, and I just tie them one knot. Yeah, not even a knot. Just, you know, I tie it once, just kind of loosely, and it stays the whole, you know, the whole time, so I don't need to worry about it hurting the tree because eventually it comes off.
Hmm. Interesting. I don't know, Ton. Is this going to help me with my cherry tree?
Maybe. These solutions, and I'm glad that it worked, you know, it might be something you could look at. I don't know that much about bird vision and to know what spectrum of light that right. they see and how they perceive it. But if it works, it works, you know, in this situation. So great.
I love success stories. Thanks, Patty. I appreciate that call and sharing that with us. It might be something I try because nothing else that I have tried has worked with my cherry tree. That's for sure. I'm about ready to put up just a big barrier, like chain link fence around it, you know, just, if I ever want a cherry off my tree.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, well, we will take a break here and take more of your calls and texts on the other side of the break. KSL Talk is the line, or you can text us at 57500. We'll be back with more of The Greenhouse Show on KSL.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
And we're back with more of The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Let's quickly take a next call. Alan is calling in from Cottonwood Heights. Good morning, Alan.
Yes. I was calling to ask, I have early girl tomatoes, and they're starting to ripen, but they're getting the brown spot on the bottom of them, you know, that forms, and I'm trying to figure out what causes that.
Little demon insects. No, I'm just kidding. It's actually called, now I made my own joke. I can't remember what it is. No, it's blossom end rot. And what happens on the first tomatoes of the season especially is that when those flowers were set, we had a lot of temperature fluctuations going from the 70s to the 90s, back to the 70s to 100, back to 70. And then also with rainstorms, which we have had fewer of, and irrigation events, between temperature and irrigation, you get a lot more of that brown spot on the bottom of the tomato during the first half of the season than the last. And so something you can do about it is just make sure that those tomatoes are evenly watered and you don't let them dry out too much. And that should go a long way to stopping it.
And the good news,
I have a drip system and for each plant. And I just wonder how often I should be watering. Maybe I'm giving them too much or not enough or
maybe. I just can't really tell you. I mean, I wish I could tell you 2 gallons twice a week or, you know, something along those lines, but it's something you just need to investigate. So what I would do is run the drip system and then go out the next day and check the tomatoes and see how wet they are and then check them the next day. And when you start to feel that soil to dry, you know, to where you can still feel some moisture, but it's on the drier side, then run the irrigation again.
Okay, and when you know, with my drip system, how long will you suggest I run it?
I don't know. It's all relative.
Well, I'm sandy soil, so, you know.
Yeah, and so it's going to be a shorter period of time, but more often. And so on sandy soil, I could foreseeably see you irrigating 3 or 4 times a week, but maybe for 10 or 15 minutes, because you need to drive that water about 6 inches into the soil at least, maybe a foot, and then turn it off.
Okay, I'll go with the 15 minutes, and I'll check it daily to see where I'm at.
And the good news, Alan, here is those tomatoes that have the brown spots, you slice that brown spot off, and they're still fine.
Yeah, okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, good luck with that, Alan. Let's get a text in here before we make another break, Ton. We got a texter asking about redbud seedling. I guess it's being eaten alive. It's got pea-sized holes in it, and the texter wants to know what's causing it and what they can use to take care of the little critter that's causing the damage.
Well, I don't know of much that puts pea-sized holes in redbud leaves. The one thing I think that was around the edges in a more scalloped fashion, it would be leafcutter bees. Leafcutter bees seem to really like redbud trees for some reason. And as long as 70% of the foliage is intact, you really don't need to do much, you know. And if, you know, because we're not quite certain, we don't have a caller online, if they wanted to use something as far as a spray, I would probably go with something like Triple Action with neem oil in it, just because it acts more of a repellent and it still is not going to knock out many predators or beneficial insects.
Any chance this could not be a critter and this is some viral or malady?
No, if they're holes, it's usually hail damage or, you know, insects chewing on it. And right. It's not a disease. There's one in stone fruits called shot hole that can do that.
Right. I'm aware of that one.
But the shot hole isn't known to get into red bud.
Okay. Well, there you go. Hopefully that helps you out with your tree there. And it is kind of hard sometimes and you can't ask questions. So if there's more information, you want to call us at KSL Talk and give that to Ton. We'll go ahead and try and help you out, maybe give you a little bit better answer than that. Right now we're going to break. We're going to do some dig around town, and then we'll be back on the other side of that and the news to answer more of your questions. KSL Talk again is the line. Give us a shout, and we'll help you out this morning.
Let's dig around town with KSL Greenhouse.
Dig Around Town is brought to you by Utah State University Extension. Check out monthly gardening tips and online gardening courses at garden.usu.edu. Gardening and art come together at Red Butte Gardens Cacti, Spirals, Spines, and Shadows Workshop on July 27th and 29th. Register at redbuttegarden.org. Join the USU Botanical Center in Kaysville and reimagine your park strips on Tuesday, July 20th from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Learn more at usubotanicalcenter.org. Learn the history of plants at Thanksgiving Point's Museum of Ancient Life on July 31st. Discover the beginnings of all our green and growing beauties on planet Earth. Get all the info at thanksgivingpoint.org. And find out more about native plants and how they adapt to our climate with Weber Basin Water on August 4th. Register at weberbasin.com. Now, this week's quick tip.
Starting in mid-July, I oftentimes get phone calls from people wondering why their tomatoes won't ripen. People see the green fruit on the plants and they want their tomatoes, but they just sit there green. In July and August, excessive summer heat can delay ripening in tomato fruit, but never fear, as the temperatures slow down, we will get ripe tomatoes.
You can also find the Dig Around Town calendar and more fun gardening info at kslnewsradio.com/greenhouse.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.